Very good, and welcome to the Fred Report Technical Market Call for February 8th, 2018. Before we really get started, I have one housekeeping item. I'm lucky enough to be in Phoenix, Arizona, in very nice hot weather, but we do have a hard stop at 11 o'clock on the call, so we'll try to be a little bit quick coming into this, and because we want to get to your questions if necessary. Okay, first of all, in the stock market, the market is doing about what we expected it to do in our yearly forecast issue. Let's give that a very quick review because there's probably a couple of new people on the call. The main thing is when we come into a year as overbought as we did last year for this year, there's a couple of interesting things we can glean from that. The first one is we had 5 years like that. Three were very strongly up, two were flat, and there were no big down years. So in terms of those indicators, there's very little chance of a major bear market starting here. However, what is interesting is, and we wrote about this in early January, late December, all of those 5 years had a down month in the first month. The characteristic of that month was we were down 9 to 12% during that month, but did not necessarily close down there. And so far this year has been, February has been down about 9%. So we're on track, and we would expect February to have a down close. That is in line with the momentum factors that we've talked about that suggest we're going to have a double bottom or complex bottom rather than a V, and that it will probably be a divergence bottom where you make a lower closing low than the previous low. In other words, a new closing low, but a higher low on my Fred's Price Oscillator. We will be watching for that. Note that we had the exact same setup from August to October in 2011 for people that have been with us that long. This is setting up to be something like that. And we think that this can still be a good year. Now, one of the characteristics of those sort of divergence bottoms is on the second move down towards the lows, you will often not have the same kind of downside thrust. You will not have as many stocks making new lows as you did on the first one. And strong stocks, the stocks you want to be looking at to buy, will usually not come near that low. Again, you can go back and look at our piece on October 9th, our Fred Alert on October 9th. I believe it's on the website. To see that structure, and we'll reference that in the weekly so that people can go back and look at it. But that's the sort of thing we're looking for. So far, everything seems on track. In terms of the sectors, we mentioned in a couple of weekly reviews over the last few weeks that on a big down, we will move IYW back up to an equal weight and probably down underweight staples. We're still looking at that. Since staples is defensive, we're probably going to wait a little bit on that and see if we can get closer to that divergence bottom. We're also going to probably move out of low volatility and back into either high relative strength or just the straight cap indexes on that bottom. Some of you have done that move already. That's probably going to be fine. You could have a little more pain, as we say. We don't think we're going to go much lower than we did. We have some numbers down in the 253, 254 area, and we got to 258 that are possible. The low close so far has been a few days ago at 263.93. So anything below 263.93 will start to satisfy that requirement. Normally, these things take about 5 weeks, which would put us out to a low at the end of February, beginning of March. But again, the pattern is important. Invest as you would. We don't think that there's any big chance of a huge drop. Also, in terms of sectors, I'm going to just mention one quick thing. We spoke with several of you about the sector review and some changes we're thinking of making. We had some requests for feedback and got some feedback on the sector review in last week's conference call material. So we're going to make a couple of changes. The biggest change we're going to make, and again, I'm mentioning this on the call because if anyone wants to talk about this with me, please feel free. when we originally found with the Fed report, we thought that the stocks that we dislike might be used as short sale stocks for hedge funds. No one's using them for that. We don't have a lot of short sellers, and the ones that we do have, which are two or three I work with directly, it will cut my workload enormously and give me a better shot at actually finding some interesting stocks if we drop the stocks that we dislike from the sector review. So we're going to do that in the coming sector review. But again, those of you on the call who want to talk about that, let me know. We've also had requests for some more trading idea type of things, and we will look for and put out a couple more trading lists during the year, like we do with the tax loss bounce list, for example. So we'll still be covering equities, obviously, in the chart book. We'll be a little more aggressive in terms of finding equities to trade and what we think are opportunities, but we will drop that constant stocks that we don't like, which we found that, as we figured, no one used. Let's talk about the bond market for a minute, because the bond market's getting interesting. TLT has moved down and has attacked the starting to attack the 117 area as of today, which is the next support after 120. We got to 117.85 today on my charts. And at the same time, TYX has moved up nicely and is still trading rather well at 31.59, very close to the 32.50 area that we've suggested would end the bull market in a secular bull market in bonds. Now, the real question is, what happens after that? And we're going to look at what we've been thinking and look at a little bit of history and discuss that right now. First of all, when you look at Louise Yamada's piece, Technical Perspectives, also in the special article section, where she shows 100 years of bond history, what you see is basically a movement in bonds after World War II, when rates were as low as they were at our lows, more or less. You see a big rise in rates, a consolidation and rally, and then another big rise in rates, and then a flat period of rates where rates are flat to up for 10 to 12 years. Moving that forward to now, we think that that could happen as well, i.e. after the election, we saw the rise in rates. Last year consisted of the rally back in bond prices and slow fall in rates, then one more big drop in rates down to where QE started, which has been our base case, which is the 100 area on TLT, and then a 10 to 12 year period where rates move gradually up, but you're able to be a bond investor, you're able to do laddered portfolios, you're able to do all sorts of stuff. For bond investors, we've talked about the virtues of high dividend stocks versus bonds, but we know you have to have bonds. And if we see that push up in rates and TLT down to 100, we would recommend buying bonds, and we think that it would be scary. In other words, everyone's going to be talking about how rates are going to go up forever, and they may very well go up forever, but they won't go up forever that fast. So we're going to want to be in those bonds when TLT hits 100, and look for laddered portfolios and stuff like that. I know that's what I'm going to do personally with my money, that's bond money. Everything is on track with stocks and bonds. In terms of commodities, we'll just mention DVC came very close to our 1750 area, hitting 17, basically 27. It started to pull back here. This is normal. It's right on support here at 1650. At the same time, we discussed an oil peak, and that definitely has been a peak in the oil stocks, not as much in oil, but we're looking for the seasonal tendency for oil to fall into spring and then possibly get another advance. For now, we're very happy that we recommended selling the gold stocks out a few weeks ago, at that peak at 77. We've exceeded our price targets by a little bit. We will probably maintain our equal weight in oil. Our underweights will probably end up being staples and telecom. We're going to really have to do some work there on those sectors versus IYW. There you are with that. Now, gold. We put gold in our models. We put it in our models right around here. We think that gold can actually have a rather nice move up and hit the 133 area. So for those of you who want to own gold, there you are. This is a good place to buy it. I'd wait personally for the daily stochastic to turn up on GLD. But if it does not, you know, we wouldn't buy it. But if it does turn up, and we're expecting it to turn up from this general area, you could see a nice move up. Let's talk very briefly about international, then we'll get some questions from Jeff Garbaz. EFA versus EEM, sadly, is still a horse race. We were hoping that we would see something, you know, to give us an idea which one of those would be better. And frankly, we still don't. We still like the international markets. In the positions we have in our set, in our models, EWL looks good. IPKW looks good. You know, we're still in IDLV. We may make a switch there. That's low volatility developed international. We don't, and EELV is our position in emerging, which is low volatility. We've switched out of India for that, and that's worked out reasonably well as INDY is down around the December highs, and EELV is still a considerable distance above those. But we don't still have a real signal. We would do your international investing the way you're doing it. You'd go along with the fundamental recommendations of the firm. Just realize that we're going to have to watch this very carefully as we come out of this corrective mode, which we think will be after the beginning, the first week of March. With that, I'm going to toss the call over to Jeff Garbaz for a minute. Jeff, do you have anything for us?
I do, Fred. How are you?
I am reasonably well, Jeff. I'm still a little sick, but it's nice and warm, and I'm burning it out of me, and it's great to be in Arizona and seeing clients out here.
Okay. So my first question for you is, when I look at the chart book for this week and go through all the charts, the one thing I see is that all the daily stochastics are oversold, but the weeklies are just starting to come down below the 70-80 level, or they're like kind of mid-range. And very few of them have come all the way down to recycle as well. And it's like 80% of the stocks are like that. I mean, I could have made, you know, there could have been one comment made on, you know, how those were doing for the week. But what do you make of that chart pattern, which is just so prevalent right now?
You know, Jeff, that's one thing I should have mentioned. I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, what that implies is what we're forecasting, i.e., a bit more consolidation, and those weekly stochastics will come down. Realize that one of the great things about the stochastic is it moves through time as the numbers fall off, as well as through price when price declines. So if we can see a few more weeks of consolidation and stay in this general area that we've been in, and those weekly stochastics come down, this market is set to take them off. That is what we are expecting. We'll just have to see what happens.
Okay, so then what do you make of the fact that the best-looking chart in the work, I mean, it's unbelievable, and it's anecdotal, but I just want to see what you think about it. I mean, the best-looking chart by far was Twitter, which today is up like another 20%. And, you know, yesterday we had Snap up 45%, and most of the social media-type stuff, it's what I call the secondary or more likely the tertiary names, are exploding, which is kind of ironic because it's the last thing you'd expect when we're in a full correction to see that taking place.
Well, my understanding, and Jeff, you're much more in tune with this. When I look at Twitter, for example, it's coming out of a giant base, okay? And it's been very, very depressed, down from 72 to 16. So you're seeing some of these stuff. And by the way, I just saw on the television, I actually have a television in my hotel and I'm watching it, the earnings have suddenly started to come in really, really well. Okay.
Yeah, they made for the first time, Fred, GAAP earnings. They had GAAP earnings instead of non-GAAP earnings. So they actually made money.
They actually made money, which, you know, you tend to think in terms of, oh, my God, why hasn't this made money before? I always did. The point is that I think the first thing you can say is that the market is reacting positively to fundamentals, i.e. Twitter has earnings finally after years. It's now actually going up. And so that's heartening to me in that the market is still basically reacting to things that it should react to, i.e. extra specially strong earnings. And let's extrapolate that out for a minute, Jeff. I don't think that the market is saying, based on this corrective behavior, that suddenly earnings aren't going to come in. And I also think, Jeff, and I'd appreciate your thought on this because I'm not a real earnings guy, that because of the lower tax rates and especially because of the territorial stuff that we've talked about before, we could see a period of positive earnings surprises going forward over the next few quarters. So I think that this whole thing is setting the stage for another advance. You know, I don't know whether I would buy Twitter up 22% today and near resistance at 40, but I certainly, if I wanted to buy it as an investor now that the earnings came in, yeah, I would do that, but I would be prepared to buy some at 24 as well if the stock were to come back down. Does that answer your question?
It does. It does. So let's go to gold and do a little micro work. What if it can't get back above 125 here? And obviously, it's kind of where it was at the beginning of the year, and then it had this blow-off move, and it obviously had a nice move from its lowest level, when the rally began basically in November. So where are you thinking that like it could go to if it can't get back above 125 here?
You know, I'm looking at the monthly gold chart as a base, and the high end of it is basically the 130, 129, 130 area this week, you know, double topping a few months ago. If it doesn't get through here, I think you could go all the way back to 118, 117, but that would be a big surprise. Rather, I'm thinking 133, 134, and maybe we sell it because this is the basing pattern actually looks pretty decent.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the simple things to do is, and you do this without doing the actual retracement stuff, is you're always like, hey, like, it's normal for it to take back 50% of the move. So we were at 117.50, and we ran to a high of, call it 129.50, so that's 12 points. So if you took, you know, half of that would be 12, half of 12 would be 6. Add that to 117.50 gets you to 123.50, which is that 50%. Does that seem like a reasonable level if we can't hold 125 and then from there?
Yeah, support at the highs of 217 at 123, yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, if I were a gold buyer and it got to 123.50, I'd buy all the gold that I could get my hands on.
Okay. Second, what do you make of all the swings that we're having on an intraday basis? I mean, we're getting lots of swings through the course of the day. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, Jeff, this is normal. This is normal. If you look at the market in terms of being a ball that you throw out a second-story window, let's say we throw a beach ball out of the second-story window, you can try to catch the ball on the way down, or you can let the ball bounce and bounce and then roll along and pick the ball up. What we're essentially trying to do with that movement into a secondary low a few weeks from now is catch the beach ball when it's rolling instead of bouncing. Okay.
Got it.
But this is normal. When you see these type of corrections, and some of the newer brokers on the call may not have seen them, but when you do see them, this is what happens. Obviously emotions are running a lot higher now than they were a few weeks ago. Right. But this is all normal, and we would expect stability and then a chance to buy this thing. And we think we know roughly how we're going to see that. But obviously, Jeff, no one knows. And again, I want to reiterate to people, because I talked to a couple of people that have said, you know, we're going to wait for that secondary low and then put all our money in on the exact day. And that's a very difficult strategy, especially for advisors. And especially, you know, we recommended a couple of stocks the other day. We recommended Boeing, for example. And Boeing is already retraced almost, you know, if the high on Boeing is 360 and the low on Boeing is 320 and we just got to 353, Boeing may not go anywhere near 320. Do you see what I'm saying? On the next pull down, some stocks may get down there and do worse. We don't know, but that's why we want to start to segue into some of these stocks, because you may end up with leading stocks that you have positions in that just take off and don't go back to that low. That's the big concern for us right now.
Okay, so let me like finesse like the action of the week so far on Monday, we had this huge, we thought Friday was a bad day, but Friday the range was 280 roughly to 275, so a 5-point range. And then Monday the range was 275 to 263, so a 12-point range. Then Tuesday we went to a lower level before we came back and kind of closed back within that range of Monday. And then yesterday, we actually gapped up and then kind of gave it back and kind of went back into the range of Tuesday and also where we were on Monday. And now we're a little bit below yesterday's low range, and we got back into, we started in the range. So we're having a lot of, like, days where we're more than likely we're going below the range and then we're coming back after like a really huge move. What do you make of that? And don't we really need to start making a bunch of inside days if we're going to be through with this?
That should happen at the end, not now. We should see violent swings.
So we should
not
be seeing
now,
like going either above the range from the day before or going below and then just trading all over the place, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think today's low is going to be 262 on the spider, and then we'll rally and not make a closing low. And that would put us down another $3 here, right? And that would be normal. We'll see this thing just trade around. And again, most of our advisor clients, Jeff, unlike your clients, aren't trying to trade this thing. If I were talking to your clients, I'd say put in orders to buy at 263 today. Right, you'll probably be probably near the low or watching that. If you get an intraday buy signal around 263, 264, I would take that, train it, and get out. Okay. But, you've got to build, a little bit of a base in here, and this is how you do it in our view.
Got it. Okay, cool. Well, that's it for Q&A for me. I think I did we went pretty in-depth on the equity stuff, so I'll turn it over to you for Q&A.
Got it. Yeah, and I'm sure that most of our questions are going to be on that. I somehow don't think we're going to have a question on should we be buying water now. But, guys, are there any questions for us?
Fred, it's Paul.
Paul, how are you?
I'm good. You?
Pretty well. I mean, obviously you kind of don't like this when it happens, but it's what's supposed to happen, so that's okay.
Yeah, we've been raising a little bit of cash and getting ready to do a little shopping. But recap your comments again regarding India, if you would. I had got an inquiry from a client asking about it, and I kind of was diverted from my desk here for a minute and I didn't catch everything.
Sure. We sold India because we thought it was going to be volatile in advance of this thing. When we did our big switch to low volatility on January 20th, we got rid of INDY and put that in EELV, with the idea being that we were going to cut the volatility in the model and then go back to something like India or something else. And I have no problem with buying India at the end of this. I mean, obviously you have to look at the indicators, but I do think it's going to be an awful lot more volatile than some of the other emerging markets right now.
Okay, great. And two stocks, if I could. APOG, Apogee, Apple Paul, Oscar George.
George, thank you. I'm looking at a daily, Paul. Let me move over to weekly charts since we're going to have some stock questions probably. I would love to get that at 37, 38 if I could. I don't know whether I can. I wouldn't hurry to buy my full position here.
Okay. And also another industrial, TEX, Terex.
Yeah, this is one that I've been watching very carefully. If I could get that at 40.5, I would. And then if it were lower than that and we got the divergence bottom, I'd buy more of it later in February, early March. But this is one of those that may not go lower. So this is one I would start to buy right away.
The weekly trend is hanging on there. But obviously when we get the stochastics to recycle, we'd probably be looking at taking a bigger position. So, okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, got it. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, it's Rob.
Rob, how are you?
Fred, it's Rob. I'm fine. How are you doing?
I am normal.
I figured I'd get this in before everybody started asking stock questions. I moved about a 15% position into lower vol.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about moving half of that now into international and then waiting for the other half to go into momentum.
I think that's a good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a little aggressive, and you may have a little bit of pain for the next few weeks, but it's only half. And knowing the way you trade, Rob, I'd do it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. For the most conservative guys on the call, and part of this, too, remember, is client optics, right? If you moved into low volatility before all this started, the clients are looking at their accounts and looking at you and thinking you're sagacious, right? And with that type of client, obviously, we don't mind moving out of low vol a little late when the coast is more clear. But for someone like Rob, who is a great, one of the better traders, I think, in terms of traders that I know, and is super aggressive, I would start to do that switch now. Other questions? Other questions? Star 6 to unmute.
Hey, Fred, it's Peter in Atlanta.
Peter, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well.
So I'm looking at Bristol Myers today. I think this is kind of qualifies as a stock that you might like from where it's gone during this correction and coming back. Is that something that you would jump on, kind of like a Boeing or an Apple or, well, I don't know. I know you didn't say Apple,
absolutely.
But Boeing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I would have probably done this one if I'd seen it when I was trying to write the piece the other night and put a couple of stocks in there. Yeah. Right now in this type, let's just make a blanket comment, Peter, for everybody, but because I think you've got this. Now, you want to be really looking at relative strength in your stocks. The stocks with the highest relative strength through this correction have the potential to be leaders, if not market leaders, sector leaders going forward, at least in the summer. So, you know, I know my inclination, everyone's inclination on this sort of thing is to say, I want to buy the cheap stuff, right? But actually what you want to be doing if you're trying to outperform and you're a little aggressive is you want to be buying the stuff that's showing high relative strength that's not down a lot at this time.
Right. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I mean,
that makes
it pains me to say it, but you know, the highest relative strength stock that we have right now is probably Amazon. And as much as I don't want to buy Amazon, you know, what correction?
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to be funny, but, you know, it's corrected about $100. What the fucking do? Pardon my friend. but, I mean, that's the sort of thing you want to look for. You know, I probably won't buy Amazon simply because I hate them. But but if you're looking for high relative strength, stuff like Bristol Myers, stuff like Amazon, stuff like Boeing, that's not trading at its lows as the market is down near its lows, is what you want.
Okay. On the flip side, just another one, KHC, Kraft Heinz. I'm just looking at this thing kind of longer term, and I'm just – this thing was at $98 at the beginning of last year, and now it's just dying. I just think that's – is there anything I'm missing on this one? Like, is this just a is there no reason to touch this?
I don't know. Well, again, I don't really want to touch this. It's in staples. You know, XLP is still one of the worst looking sectors here in the market, and that's probably going to be our next underway. You know,
right.
If the economy really takes off with some of the stuff that's happening, defensive consumer staple stocks are probably not going to be big-time leaders.
Yeah.
Okay.
That kind of makes sense.
So the other thing, Peter, is I certainly don't think we have to race to buy them. You know, we want to look for, you know, staple stocks that are performing well after the market bottoms. There'll be plenty of time to buy those if we have to be in stocks like that.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Sure. Other questions? Remember, star 6 to unmute your phones. Very good. Then we will going once.
Well, Fred, as nobody else has asked, I know you have a couple more minutes. What would I know you mentioned Bank of America, Boeing. What would be your couple of favorites to be buying in here? Or are you buying into another pullback, dividend, non-dividend?
You know, I would still be buying those three, and I'm looking for three or four more to look at. But, Rob, anything with high relative strength, actually people that have Dorsey that are looking at stocks, that are looking at Dorsey Wright high relative strength stocks, that may be a good way to go. I overlooked BMY. Peter's right. That stock is trading really well. And again, in terms of the dividend stocks, you know, something like SPHD, which should perform very well relative to bonds over the next 7 months, I would use this weakness to buy that. But Rob, I tend to buy dividend stocks differently in terms of the technicals. I tend to look at a stock that's a dividend payer and look for the yield that I want, and tend to look a little bit less than the chart pattern, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd probably do that too, because I'm looking for it for the yield.
We're looking for the yield. We're looking for the yield, and for the yield to be safe.
I give my dividend stocks a lot more room than.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is you know you're going to get more money for the client. You can always average. You can always write calls. If you decide you bought one that really is not very good, there's all sorts of maneuvers we can make over the next 7-8 months to cut the losses in that and get out.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so,
great. All right, thank you.
Yeah, good. Sure.
Fred, it's Joseph?
Yes. Oh. Joseph. Let's have Joseph first and then the next guy.
Okay, sorry. Let me take a look at Cisco, which I think gapped up at the end in November or so and pulled back, but it seems to be within a couple of points of its high.
Yeah, this is a nice-looking stock. Obviously, it came down with technology. This is an example of a high relative strength tech stock that I would buy. You know, another one, frankly, is Microsoft, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got the right idea. Look for these kind of names. And, you know, Joseph, I don't think that you have to panic and make sure you're all in by the end of today. Okay.
Right.
So I dribble away. I look for these names. If they're, you know, one rated stocks at Merrill, and they've got this relative strength, I would buy them. I think a few months from now, you will be very happy you did, and you won't have a huge amount of pain into the next while.
Right. Okay.
Got it. And it's great to hear your voice. Tell Rui I'm still really enjoying my soda screen unit.
I'll let her know.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, please. Guys, other questions? I heard one more coming in.
Yes. Brad is Barry in Atlanta.
Did I hear Barry?
Barrett,
let's have you and then the other guy, and then
okay.
That's probably just about it. Barrett, have it.
Okay. I missed the first 30 seconds of the call, and I know you talked about the S&P levels of support. What are those again that you see?
Right where I've been writing, basically 260 to 252, 253. And we think that there is an excellent chance that we will make a new closing low in price. It doesn't have to be a new low in actual price for the move before this is over. And it should take a few weeks.
Are you watching now to see how small caps have been performing relative to the pullback, or are you waiting for the full cycle to happen for the next month to play out?
The full cycle, but we had a really good question from somebody, I think it was Steve in Birmingham, suggesting that if small caps correct about the same amount that the large caps correct, they're actually quite viable.
That's a coup, because I see IJR right now. IJR, and my layman look at it, it has performed pretty admirably.
Yeah.
Compared to the
S&P. Now, again, yeah, something could change there, but yes, that is absolutely what you would be looking for to buy small caps. Okay.
Fantastic. Thank you, Fred. Thanks for all your leadership, man. I appreciate it.
knock on wood, I mean, one of the things that's making me really nervous here, by the way, guys, is that the market's doing exactly what we thought it would do. That almost always never lasts. There's almost always some sort of a ringer in there. But, you know, you have to go with your analysis, right? So, you know, there you are. And thank you, Barrett. We had another question from somebody, and let's take that one.
Yeah, Fred, John off in Minneapolis. Would you still buy
John,
Apple?
John, how are you?
Good.
Yes. Would you? I think Apple's showing some relative strength. It's on support. Now, John, the ideal thing on Apple will be, and you can see this happening, the stock has basically gone sideways from 180 to here, and that weekly stochastic has fallen from 90 to 30, okay? One of your clues, especially for you, because you're a little more conservative than some of my more wild-eyed guys on the call, is when that weekly stochastic turns up, you want to own the Apple that you want to own, okay?
Okay.
And you can certainly buy some here, but let's see what happens and if we can't get that weekly stochastic down in a few weeks, okay? Especially
right.
for you, John, because my guess is you're trading in a way you want to see more of an all-clear for your clients in terms of optics before you really throw money, right?
Yeah. Well, I've already bought some, so
I just keep going at it a little bit.
Goldman and Bernstein both are kind of neutral on it or bearish on it right now, so and they have a lot of weight, but who knows? Okay, thanks a lot.
And you know what's interesting here, too, by the way, and I don't think you can buy this, but Morgan Stanley is trading extremely well and is in an uptrend. If you want to put some money in your 401k into Morgan Stanley or for Merrill Guys, Bank of America, you want to be looking to do that in here. That looks like a pretty good maneuver.
Thank you, Fred.
Sure. Other questions? Very well. Going once. Going twice.
Very good, Fred, Jeff, I got one quick question for you. Okay, pull up the chart of AOR. This is actually kind of a pretty cool ETF. It tracks how U.S. stocks are doing, how European stocks are doing, Asian stocks. It tracks how bonds are doing. It tracks how currencies are doing, commodities. So it tracks everything. So basically, we're in a situation right now, since the market peaked on the 26th of January, no asset class is working, which is really the worst scenario of all. Do you continue to think that that scenario plays out, or do you think that we start to see at some point bonds starting to kick in because traditionally they do when equities get really crushed? Or do you think we could just be in one of those times where nothing works and the only thing that really works is cash?
Jeff, let's put it this way. This is something that could happen here. A lot of people are blaming the decline in stocks on higher rates. Okay, and I think that could be true. I think stocks and bonds might move together for a while. But the way it should work is if you can imagine two corks sitting on top of the water, okay, if you get big down days in bonds and rises in rates, that should pull stocks down, okay? But when that behavior stops, stocks will pop back up to the surface and bonds will not. Okay, and as you see the big downdrafts in bonds, as you see us get down near that 100, assuming that works, you should see corrective behavior in these stocks that then ends and the market pops back up. That's what we're expecting more than anything. Okay, and then, you know, if we're right, or I should say if Luis Yamada's analysis and charts are correct, when we finally get to that period where TLT is at 100, it should go fairly quiescent, and stocks should do pretty well. And we're kind of expecting that possibly by March, right? And it'll be more like the 90s when you see a big move in bonds and people go, oh my God, inflation's coming back and blah, 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 and the market would go down. And then everything would sort of stabilize. Bonds would stay where they were or drop slightly, and the market would go up nicely. And that's kind of what we're thinking is going to happen. So it's going to be different, and they'll be a little bit more connected, but not long-term.
That's it. Does anyone else have any more questions? Very well. Going once. Going twice. This will end the Fed Report technical market call for February 8, 2018. Any Arizona people that are on the call that would like to try to visit with me, feel free to send an email to me or to Jack, and we'll try to work that. But I think we're pretty much seeing everybody that we need to see. So thank you, and have a good rest of the week of trading and a fun weekend.